For 30 years, I had the perfect job. I was a congregational rabbi. I studied, I taught, I officiated at life cycle events, bar mitzvah services, weddings and funerals, trying to enhance the joy and mitigate the sorrow of those moments with my words and with elements of the Jewish tradition. All things I had been taught to do and felt good about doing. I confess there was one other aspect of being a congregational rabbi that pleased me. I have read that the most frightening thing a person can contemplate, even more than the fear of death, is the fear of having to speak in public. That's not me. In a room where 200 people are sitting and listening, and one person is standing and speaking, I will always be most comfortable being the one standing and speaking. I'm not sure how I ended up being a rabbi. It was never my intention growing up. I don't think it ever occurred to me, nor to my parents, who suggested regularly that they would like me to be a doctor. I entered college with no idea of what I would do professionally, hoping that college would give me a direction. My father was a successful businessman, which ruled that out as a career. I did not want to go into business and fail, disappointing my father, nor did I want to go into business and be more successful than my father, a highly unlikely outcome. I have known families in which that engendered not pride, but resentment. I entered Columbia in 1951, listing my major as liberal arts, which left open all possibilities short of medical school. I also took advantage of Columbia's proximity to the Jewish Theological Seminary, where my mother had studied to be a Hebrew teacher some 25 years earlier, and where some of her most revered teachers still taught. The seminary offered evening classes for students who wanted the education without seeking a career in Jewish professional life. In those evening classes, I came to recognize four or five familiar faces from my freshman classes at Columbia, and we bonded. We would come back from class and stay up late talking theology, trying to make sense of the Holocaust, details of which had just become widely known, and discussing what the State of Israel, founded just a few years earlier, would mean for Jewish life. Several of those friends were planning to study for the rabbinate, though none of them did, only I ended up there. After graduating from Columbia in 1955, I enrolled in the seminary's rabbinical school and emerged 5 years later as a conservative rabbi. My spiritual life, what I believe, teach, and practice, has been shaped in large measure by two sets of circumstances. The first was the home I grew up in and the synagogue my family and I attended. The rabbi at the Brooklyn Jewish Center was Israel Leventhal, recognized as one of the outstanding preachers of the American Jewish community. Stories circulated of how Orthodox Jews would walk over the Williamsburg Bridge from the Lower East Side to Brooklyn on Friday nights, as they could not take trains on the Sabbath, to hear Leventhal speak. The quip was that every newly ordained conservative rabbi would head out to his first pulpit with two books in his luggage, The Pocket Guide to Jewish Practice and the Collected Sermons of Israel Leventhal. To this day, I cannot sit down to write a sermon without feeling Rabbi Leventhal's presence looking over my shoulder to make sure I'm being faithful to the text. I would describe the religion practiced in my home as observant but not compulsive. When we lit the Sabbath candles on a Friday night, or observed the traditional dietary rules about permitted and forbidden foods, I never had the sense that we were obeying a command from a God who would be displeased with us if we had not done those things. Nor did we obsess about the consequences of our inadvertently making a mistake. Rather, we felt we were making a statement about who we were as a family, and although I don't think the word would have occurred to any of us, we were bringing a measure of holiness into an ordinary middle-class home, turning mundane moments into appointments with God. I could not have predicted at the time that the concept of observant but not compulsive, and the absence of a belief in a God who would punish us for disobedience, would go on to become cornerstones of my personal and professional life. The second circumstance that shaped my religious outlook was the illness and death of our son Aaron from one of the world's rarest diseases, progeria, the rapid aging syndrome, as I chronicled in my book, When Bad Things Happen to Good People. It was in the presence of my sick and dying child that I discovered how inadequate the traditional perspective was that I had grown up with and had been taught, that God has his reasons which we cannot comprehend or judge. It neither made sense of the suffering nor offered us much in the way of comfort. If I was to continue to serve as a rabbi and to honor my son's memory, I would have to find a better explanation.